Welcome to Access Radio. It's another Wednesday. I'm your host, Amy Amanti. My pronouns are she, her. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. Access Radio is broadcasting to you from the traditional territories of the Squamish, the Musqueam, and the Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. If you're listening to Access Radio, this is a broadcast platform, one of very few, always pains me to say out loud, where the content is created, it's requested, it's initiated, and it's governed by folks with lived experience of disability. This is super important as we honor the disability convention of nothing about us without us. Yes, I said it loud and clear. I myself am legally blind. I'm also neurodivergent, and I'm delighted to have the opportunity to share stories and issues, all things that are relevant and important to the disability community. I am also a volunteer, as is just about everyone who works with Co-op Radio, including Victor Schwartzman, who is our technical producer. And while our physical stations are still closed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, we are all working hard to bring you high quality content through broadcast while working from our homes. So this is when we say, if you hear a screen reader go off in the background or a dog bark or a baby cry or, I don't know, children laughing, all of those things, friends, are just part of working from home. And after 2 years of doing that, I hope that we can give space for that. But if you like what you're listening to in terms of content, and I absolutely know that you will, perhaps you might want to consider making a donation to the station. And you can do that through the website, which is www.cooperadio.org, no hyphen in co-op. And we thank folks for any contributions that they make. Okay, this is when I get to throw that housekeeping hat off and invite guests into the space, which is like the most fun thing to do on this platform. So today I've got with me a published writer. I just about forgot the word published. Published writer, member of the blind, partially sighted community, Christy Cassie in the space. Welcome, Christy, to the space.
Hi. Thank you for inviting me. I don't get to put on my writing hat in a public space very often.
Well, why not? You're a writer.
Yes, I am. I can proudly say that I've been a writer since I was a little girl, and I first realized how powerful adjectives were to describe things.
That's so interesting. So, Christy, share with us a little bit about your background in writing, your education around writing. How did that become a thing for you professionally?
So I grew up in Trinidad and Tobago. I was born in Trinidad and Tobago, which is a tiny island in the Caribbean just above Venezuela in South America. Mm-hmm. It is 10 degrees north of the equator, to give you some
cool
geographic information. And I guess it's been colonized, like a lot of our countries. It was colonized by the Spanish and then the British. So the education system is very British.
Right.
And so I grew up being taught that if you want people to respect you as a writer, the big words are what is important. You've got to sound big and stuffy and fancy. So 8-year-old me, when I first started writing poetry, loved that. I'm like, oh, I'll just describe flowers as all sorts of things. the brighter and bolder, the better. And I was always a voracious reader because another kind of cultural influence. I come from a culture, if you have a disability, you're kind of kept in a corner. So right. I didn't have friends. And my mom bought me books. And that's what I did. I read and read and read. And then I would copy. I would use the words I learned. So the one comment I get from writing groups that I'm in is that my descriptions are very visual, and people are always surprised when I say, well, yeah, I'm legally blind, but I guess I've read so much and I do have usable vision that I incorporate that into my writing. So my visual descriptions are really, really vivid, I've been told. Mm-hmm. But again, I think that's my upbringing. It's like I was, you know, use all those words to impress. So when I was in grade three, I won my grade school's grade five creative writing prize because the principal was very impressed, a British lady who, if it weren't for her, I would have not been in school because no school in Trinidad wanted to accept a blind person. I was supposed to make brooms in a factory.
Right.
And my parents refused. So Mrs. Joan Kenny said, you know, if you pass my test, little four-year-old Christy, you can come to my school. And so I did. But yeah, she gave me the grade five creative writing prize when I was in grade three. And since then, like every year since then, I won creative writing prize right up till the end of high school. And that's high school in Trinidad. And then I moved to Canada in 1992 and continued winning creative writing prizes right up till I graduated. So I remember my English teacher, when I first moved to Canada, I think I'd come in two months before the school year ended in grade seven. Mm-hmm. And she came to me, she said, "I'm so sorry, I can't give you the creative writing prize because you've only been here, but just know that you deserve it." And I'm like, okay. I mean, I've been growing up, like, if a teacher doesn't give you something, you don't question it. So
right. That makes sense.
Whatever. But that apparently was the last time that one person ever got the creative writing prize. Then I took over. So, so yes,
I won a legacy.
Yeah. My grandpa was a journalist. So he wrote for the Trinidad Guardian, and I guess writing is in there. He was also a teacher. So
in your blood.
I say I'm my grandparents' product, really.
When you shared with us that you were a voracious reader, or were, I'm going to say were, yeah, but are, you know, a yeah, voracious reader, and that your mother bought you books, you know, you also said that you're legally blind. So how accessible were books for you?
Up to about 5-6 years ago, I could actually read regular print relatively well. I had to hold the book closer than most people, but I could read it pretty well. So I read regular print books my whole life. Trinidad is, again, it's you know, growing up in that culture, if you don't fit in, you're kicked out. So right. If I had to press my nose to my book to read, that's what I did. Because
so you were passing.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's how I did it. Yes, my eyes got tired. Yes, I got eye strain headaches, but I was reading. Yeah. So I would read on the bus going to work. When I moved to Vancouver, I'd read on the SkyTrain and I'd get all those dirty looks because, you know, I'm holding a cane and a book.
Right.
People would be like, what?
How can both things be true at the same time?
Yeah. So I gave up asking for a seat because I didn't want to deal with that. So yeah. I just hung on to the pole, read my book. I do a lot of audiobooks. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly the same, but I do like it. But I do miss reading print.
Yeah,
I really do.
Are you comfortable, Christy, talking about your eye condition?
Yeah. So I was born with hydrocephalus, which is fluid in the brain. Mm-hmm. And because of where I was born, they didn't diagnose it in time. So the fluid damaged my optic nerve. So I've got light perception in my left eye and tunnel vision in my right eye. So I say I don't have usable vision in my left eye. And in my right eye, it allows me to see faces and objects if they're relatively close. I could see about maybe a block away, probably not in perfect detail, but I can tell you if a bus is coming.
Right.
And I can see traffic lights and that. So I have really good usable vision. And again, I owe that just the usability of my vision to growing up for the first 13 years of my life with no cane, no nothing. So you hold your mom's hand and do what you had to do, or you stumble. And I remember in high school in Trinidad, and this is, you know, corporal punishment is a thing. It's real, my friends. Wow. It only got abolished in Trinidad, I think, in 2014. But anyway, you'd get beaten if your shoes were dirty. And my shoes were forever dirty because we had these wide, what would you guys call it? I guess drains, like the, you know, the things that manholes usually cover.
Oh, right? Yeah. Okay.
So those drainage ditches, they're not covered in Trinidad. You just have to kind of do a huge step over them. And with my balance and my vision, I was forever sliding because I just couldn't do it. So my shoes would always have mud on them. I'd get forever yelled at. But I mean, that's how I grew up. So it just is. I have a lot of coping strategies from that. And some people equate it to stubbornness. I say it's made me who I am. Canada has gotten me where I am, because I wouldn't be a teacher and I wouldn't be living on my own mm-hmm. if it wasn't for Canada. But Trinidad's made me kind of determined to figure out a way before I actually ask for help or look for an accessible way.
Right. Yeah. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's, I know you brought some excerpts from a book that you've written. So why don't you set up what the book is, Broken Bites? I'm outing the book, but let's set this up. What's it about? Where did the idea come from?
So Broken Bites, I decided to write it in 2017. Broken is the name I'm using for an ex-boyfriend of mine. He was my first serious, I guess, long-term relationship. We went out for 9 years, 4 years long distance. I was in Toronto, he was in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And then he said, I'm not moving, so you have to move. And I thought, well, I love you. Of course I'm going to move. I'm 22. This is going to be my prince. He's going to marry me. We're going to have a big house. It's going to be awesome.
Right.
So, so Brogan is his code name. And why it's called Broken Bites is the story is told in what I call flash fiction. So 400 to 500 word snapshots almost. And it's interspersed with some poetry. So it kind of weaves, I call it the rise and fall of first love. Yeah.
Oh, I'm interested to get in the weeds of this, Christy. So let's have a listen of this first excerpt that you've read from Brogan Bites. Mm-hmm. I always want to say Brogan's Bite. And it's not, it's Brogan Bites. So every time I say it out loud, I'm like, it's the S is the second word. This is my dyslexia, but I can't get it. Brogan Bites. Mm-hmm. So let's have a listen to this first clip. Anything you want to set us up for about this clip?
So this one is Feast for Pigs. And now, you know, I haven't looked at this book in a while, and I'm just cringing at the title now, going, oh, does that sound too negative for the poor family? But it was my first Christmas in Vancouver, and to say the least, it was culture shock, because I've always dated white guys, not by choice, just that's the way it happens.
Yeah.
So this was my first Christmas away from my West Indian culture and entertaining white rednecks, we'll call them.
Okay, yeah. I'm interested to take a listen. So let's play this clip.
Feast for Pigs, December 2003. In its silver roaster, ham glistened with brown sugar and pineapple juice. Thinly sliced medium rare roast beef, garnished with onions and mushrooms, stretched before it, flanked by three trays of cheddar and cream-drenched potatoes. Also on the table was a glass bowl of fusilli, studded with red cherry tomatoes and green broccoli florets in a white wine basil sauce. I added a glass bowl of crisp baby greens and glanced at the hors d'oeuvres on the coffee table. The escargot looked elegant in their garlic butter brioche, and crab dip nestled in a sourdough bowl artistically decorated with bread cubes. I felt a wave of pride and panic. This was not like any Christmas spread my parents had ever prepared. I felt a wave of nostalgia for Dad's curried duck, Mom's dal puri, and her famous stuffing with potatoes and fried gizzards. I had grown up with a Christmas West Indian style. What did I know about entertaining Western style? "Does she have the white blood?" Brogan's grandmother had demanded the first time she met me. "I think we all have the same blood," Brogan had answered, barely stifling his grin. His grandmother directed her suspicious eyes at me. "Do you want him just for his citizenship?" "No, ma'am," I hastened to assure her, mildly offended at the insinuation. "I have my degree in English and French. I went to university." "Hmph," she said. "People like you are the reason no one's going into the trades. Tell me, who will do all the hard work? You tell me. At least my grandson knows hard work." Well, there went my chance to prove to Brogan's family that I was a worthy girlfriend to a man they called God's gift to women. I had cracked open Cooking for Dummies a mere 6 months ago in my fledgling bid for independence. Who was I to brand myself a hostess anyway? 3 hours later, Brogan's parents sprawled on my living room carpet, beach whale style. On each end of my 1970s thrift store couch, Brogan and Grandpa Jerry sprawled like sated wildcats after a feast of buffalo. Urban gourmet overwhelms redneck family, I thought with an inner giggle. My middle class mom and dad wouldn't be caught dead lying on some stranger's carpet. "A good woman packs the plate until there's no room left," Grandpa Jerry declared, thumping Brogan on the knee. "You got yourself a good one there. I like them snail bun things," he added. "And the crab dip, and oh my God, them potatoes," Brogan's mom surely declared, rubbing her stomach. I hovered in the doorway between the kitchen and the living room, jittery with adrenaline that had prevented me from eating more than a few bites of the dinner everyone was raving about. The hostess in me was doing a happy dance. Turning to the now depleted serving dishes, I said, "Hopefully you have room for dessert." "What you got?" Grandpa Jerry perked up. "Cookies, brownies, fruit tarts," I rattled off. "I can put on coffee and tea if you want." In short order, there was a platter of homemade baking on the coffee table, and I was handing out cups of coffee. I listened to the clatter of cutlery resume. When I joined the huddle in the living room, Brogan's 18-month-old niece Emily crawled over to me and put her head in my lap. "Me stuffed," she slurred, and promptly fell asleep.
Okay, Christy, the first thing that comes to my mind is I'm hungry.
Yeah, I was hungry when I read that too.
The food sounds amazing. I mean, obviously there are other things in there, like you said, culture shock. And one thing a line that really stuck out to me was this idea of, you know, the parents saying, "Do you want him for his citizenship?" So let's talk a bit about that experience that you had. Obviously you wrote, I'm assuming you wrote from your experience.
Yes. Everything is absolutely true. I have a very good memory, which my exes absolutely hate.
Hates? Yeah, I bet.
So does my current boyfriend, but hey, that's, you gotta live with it. I have an excellent memory. So don't tell me anything you don't want me to remember. So everything is exactly true, exactly as I remember it. And all the names are changed.
Of course,
But I remember, and this is, I guess it would have been, I moved to Vancouver in June of 2003. So this is 6 months after moving to Vancouver and after opening Cooking for Dummies. And I remember opening Cooking for Dummies and going, "This was written by a white person. This food has no seasoning beyond white pepper or white, or salt and
salt black and pepper."
And I thought, okay, but that's fine. I'll just try to cook like this. And I was a size 12 when I moved to Vancouver. And within a year, I was a size 4. Now, that had a lot to do with emotional stress and, as I say, culture shock and all that. But I swear it was, my cooking was horrible. Like, I could not eat it. But this, this Feast for Pig, like the, that Christmas, I have to say, it turned out really well. Like, all the food turned out really well. I started cooking at 6 a.m. and I finished at 4:30 p.m. because I knew they were arriving at 5 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah. And I made everything from scratch and had it all laid out. And yeah, it's because that's how my parents had taught me to entertain, is you know, guests are coming. So you do your best, right?
Yeah. Plus you have to clean house and all the other stuff.
Well, yeah. And I have to do all the dishes and because the other part of culture shock is we had 1 week of honeymoon when I moved to Vancouver, where Brogan said, wow, you're here, this is cool. And then the next week it goes, okay, so here's what I expect. You'll be doing everything a woman should be able to do, because my mom can do this and my mom can do that. And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking in my head, well, my mom does all that, so I guess I should be able to too.
Right.
Not thinking like I'm only 22.
Not knowing how to find your voice yet. Yeah.
Well, Pat, and again, culturally, as a girl with a disability, I wasn't taught anything, nothing. Yeah. So I, you know, it was shocking. So anyway, it turned out really well. And I know Brogan's family loves eating. So, and they were brutally honest. If something didn't taste good, they would tell you. Right. So yeah, the compliments were, I knew it was heartfelt.
So, and I loved the visual at the end of that, like the beach whales and the carpet, right? Like, I'm so full, I can't move.
Oh, I know. And to me, I was so flabbergasted. I'm like, again, it's that middle class versus whatever class. I'm like, my parents would never lay on somebody's carpet.
Yeah, that's right.
But I was flattered. You know, it's like, okay, I made it. Because again, I mean, he is probably still their God's gift to women. So, I mean, I had so much to prove.
Yeah.
And I did it.
Don't rock the boat. Don't take the baby for granted. There's many people whose parents are like, but that's my baby. That's my, and it's like, he's a grown ass man.
God, not bless.
Brogan's not the only one out there in the world, so grown-up humans in this space, take note. We're not your maids or your servants.
So I still take pride in my cooking because it's one of the first skills I truly taught myself.
I think that's great. Let's have a listen to episode 2. I'm calling them episodes, but clip two, episode 2, because you've planned these sort of in kind of a bit of a progression. So I want to talk.
That's right.
Yeah. So let's listen to the second clip here.
Grease Frightening, September 2004. Teriyaki roasted pork chops with roasted garlic and chilies, still crisp zucchini and carrots, glistened under a waft of steam. It looked as scrumptious as the picture on the box that touted no fuss cleanup of this 2-in-1 appliance. Lifting the skillet off the already preheated griddle surface, I set wedges of garlic bread to toast as I carried the skillet to the table where Brogan was already enjoying his Caesar salad. Everything should remain nice and hot, I cooed, caressing the lid of the skillet as I would a long-desired lover. And I smiled to myself, would only have one pot to wash. Whatever gets dinner on the table, promptly, Brogan declared. He enjoyed getting me top-of-the-line appliances as long as Meals filled the plate, and dinner was served promptly at 6 p.m. The skillet was a little harder to clean than I had anticipated. No problem, an overnight soak would do the trick. The griddle got a careful going over with a soapy cloth. No submersion for that baby. Saturday morning saw sunny side up eggs, bacon, and hash browns sizzling on the griddle. It took a toothbrush to get rid of the grease drippings that time. Mental note, start cooking healthier. I chuckled. Who was I kidding? I was living with the Lord of meat and potatoes. A few months later, I shuffled into the kitchen after a night that had included a bottle of sangria, a box of wine, and a six-pack of beer. I glared at the skillet, goop hardening along its sides, splattered over its dials, and plastered over the griddle. The ghost of everything fried emanated from its pores and thickened the air, annoying my already topsy-turvy stomach. Lord knows why it took me 11 years to get rid of that thing. It sat on the top of a cupboard long after Brogan and I broke up, dust speckling its black surface like dandruff on hair. I toted it with me long after Brogan and I broke up, long after my taste for red meat had fizzled. Hopefully, its next love affair will be a happier one.
Christy, again, you're talking a lot about food in this. Yes. Before it's all throughout the book, but again, very hungry.
Yeah, you know, this one was a funny one. I part of my development as a writer is I joined this internet writing workshop, and they're awesome. They have lists for any type of writing,
right?
Playwriting, novel writing. I joined the short fiction or the flash fiction group. And basically you have an assignment every week, and then, you know, people give you feedback, and that's how you grow. And then you get to do the same to them. And I wrote this one. It was about buyer's remorse. It was just supposed to be a simple story about, like, I got this thing as a present and I thought it would be cool, and then it sucked. But yeah, when people read it, they're like, oh my God, what a bastard. And I'm like, the pan? Oh, the guy. Yeah, the guy. But I'm like, how can you get that out of that story? And I think this is what people don't get. When people say, you know, what is a good writer? Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes a good writer, right? Because, like, as an English teacher, people always say, I want to write like you. And it's hard to explain, but that's the gift, I suppose, is when you can make a buyer's remorse story tell a relationship story.
Yeah.
But I remember that night clearly too, that stupid box of wine. That luckily I didn't drink. But yeah, a lot of food. I don't know why I kept that stupid thing. I think because it was, I don't know, you just feel like, okay, well, it's new, I might use it. But yeah, I'm glad I gave it away.
What about this, like the intent behind, you know, clearly you were saying that Brogan was buying you appliances, right? Mm-hmm. With the caveat that you were going to be the one to make sure that dinner was on the table at 6 o'clock every night.
That's right.
And so you just finished telling us that 22-year-old you really didn't have, I don't know, the ability to fight back, or the language or the tools or the knowledge to do those things, to maybe advocate for yourself. But looking back on that moment.
Yeah. Well, looking back on that moment, I realized how my parents would say, right? My parents always say right now that I'm very Canadian. I'm not very West Indian. And looking back at that, I realized how West Indian I was, because I was going back, judging myself on these cultural norms. Like, an Indian girl, by the time they're 24, I mean, you should be cooking for your in-laws and their in-laws. And, you know, you should be like an expert on all of this. And I so was not.
Right.
I was learning as I went, and learning to cook food that I didn't grow up with. Like, my mom is Muslim, so we never cooked pork. So for me to cook pork chops, I was like, what is this? like I kind of felt a little bit of like, I felt like an evil person because I'm like, okay, I hope my papa doesn't hear this because I'm not being a very good Muslim girl right now, even though I was raised both Christian and Muslim to respect my mom and my dad. But, you know, just again, that culture shift.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was more to please him. I think now I look back at it, it was all out of love. It's like, I love you. I want to please you. And you obviously like to eat. And to give you context, I met Brogan. He was a size 45 waist. He was only 19, but he was a size 45 waist.
Wow.
So dude liked to eat and drink. So,
well, you only live once.
Yes, yes. And by the end of it, I mean, he was eating healthier and he had lost a lot of weight. And he, yeah, as you will see in the next clip, it, total change around. But yeah, it's again, it's looking back, it's that culture shift and just doing everything you can because you love this person. It's first love, but I think I also see the inklings of, I don't know if this is the right fit here, but
yeah.
I'm only a year into living.
Give it some time. Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm still learning. It's my fault. And there's the self-blame and all this. So. Yeah.
And what's the phrase? A leopard never changes its spots.
Yeah.
I remember my first love was much the same, Christy, but I mean, I was 17 when I met him. He was 5 years older than I was, which I didn't know right away.
Right.
And we were together for 6 years and he was a nice person, but we just weren't compatible. And I kept hanging on and hanging and hanging on. And it's like, at some point I realized, why am I hanging on? Is it because I feel like I can't, air quotes, do better? Right. And so, you know, you talk yourself in and out of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So I totally get that.
I was still in my honeymoon phase, like, wow, I'm living on my own. This is awesome. I can't possibly go back and live at home anymore. And
Yeah. All right. Well, let's have a listen of excerpt 3, episode 3.
Love is Blind, May 2008. Bathroom break before we leave the mall, I called. Sure, Brogan said from behind a dressing room curtain, but we're already late for the meeting. We are not, I said. I rolled my eyes and laughed, shifting the shopping bags in my hand. Behave, or I won't do this. Yes, you will. You owe me. I kicked myself for being lulled into old patterns. I was the one who had quote-unquote made our breakup public, and now it was my responsibility to launch him into the world of single men. There was no more we where Brogan and I were concerned. Brogan emerged from the dressing room and posed in front of a full-length mirror, surveying the blue Speedo hugging his taut buttocks and the sleek dip of the material below his toned abs. I struggled to remain dispassionate. Fits well, I managed. If it's comfortable, pay and let's go. We have a lot more to get. Mentally, I checked off his triathlon shopping list. Running shoes, Speedo, goggles, jock strap. Thank God I hadn't had to check that fit. So Lucy says we have no spark, Brogan said to me as we got on the SkyTrain after our shopping trip was completed. What the hell is spark? The switch from lust to attraction, I suppose, I mumbled. Brogan snorted. She had no objection to lust when I pounded her. But then she turns on the waterworks because I tell her the headaches she's had since her mother passed away is a manifestation of her own weakness. She used all my damn tissues. What made you say you loved me? I asked, watching signboards, fencing, trees blur beyond the SkyTrain window. Dunno. Seemed the right thing to say at the time. Brogan frowned. Why are you getting bent all out of shape? We're only having a hypothetical discussion. A 9-year relationship was hypothetical, I thought to myself. Seriously? Our stop was announced. I walked briskly along the SkyTrain platform as we disembarked. Let's go meet this guy selling you his bike, I said. I have a lot of things to do.
Wow, Christy. Okay, so you
talk about a change, huh?
Right. Yeah, you can clearly see this progression. Talk to me about that moment. What you remember of that moment?
Man, I was a doormat. No more West Indian girl there. That story. Wait, back up. Yes, I was still doing what I had to do for a guy.
Launching him back into the world of singledom.
Yeah, because it was my fault. Because when he said we should see other people, we were standing on a SkyTrain platform.
Wow.
And he said, we need to see other people. I'm like, I just spent an hour and a half trying to find you a shirt and a pants and a tie to wear to somewhere, and you're telling me this? Okay, whatever. Anyway, again, lots of self-blame and all that. But I don't know, maybe still love, right? And I think there was a lot of self-blame. I let him down. Now I got to do everything to make up for that.
Right.
So, and a lot of, I don't know if it's, again, now that I think about it, maybe a little bit of ableism, because I grew up with the attitude, again, my upbringing, blind people, how can they shop for themselves? Right?
Like, oh, Brogan has a disability?
Oh, right. Yes, never mentioned that. Okay, so I've always dated white guys, not by choice. And I also happen to only date blind guys or people, the guys with less vision than me,
right?
So maybe I mean it's so funny looking back at it with a different lens, because I had, again, who will help him, right? Yep. he has to go buy a Speedo. Who's gonna help him? He's got to go buy a chalk strap.
Yeah.
Who's gonna help him?
So you're right, a bit of that internalized ableism.
Right? All
that, yeah, going on.
Because I'm like, well, I mean, now I'm like, well, you got a mother and a sister. Go ask them.
Yeah.
Right? Or go ask the salesperson.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it got so bad. I remember the guy, the salesperson at SportCheck knew me. I would walk in and he goes, need another jock strap? And I'm like, yeah. You remember the size, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Here's the specs. Yeah. Computer. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he was taking off and he got accepted to this triathlon team and he had a whole shopping list. And he looked damn good in that Speedo. By that time he'd adopted my healthier eating style and he was dressing better. Like, I'd taught him, I guess.
That's right. You set it up and another woman gets to take advantage of that.
And that's my pattern.
Yeah.
Because I grew up that way. Now that I know, my mom would send me shopping for my dad and my brother. They never bought their own cologne, shirts, pants, whatever.
Right.
As soon as I was old enough, I was the one who did it. So this is me. I always teach my guys to dress better, and then they get all uppity and, you know, think they deserve better. So at least my current guy doesn't, but not yet. Brogan started getting a lot of girl attention all of a sudden, and it got to his head. All of a sudden he's like, whoa, cool. This is just wow. He lost a lot of weight. He looked pretty good. He looked pretty good. So yeah, that Speedo was a good one. And it was a long shopping trip.
I can only imagine.
At Metro Town. And then we had to go to Joyce Station and meet a guy who was selling him a bike. Found the guy. Did that. This was before, I don't even know. Well, I guess, no, the internet was around, of course. This is 08. So yeah, I don't even know. Maybe, I guess it was Craigslist at that point. Like, I don't even know. And this might be ableism again, right? That made me help him. I'm like, blind guy going to meet a stranger at a SkyTrain station? No, I gotta help him.
I'm more interested in knowing how the blind guy rides a bike.
Okay, so this bike, this particular bike was going to be, what do you call those bikes? The stationary? No.
Oh, a stationary bike. Yeah, like an exercise bike?
Yeah, that hooks on to there's a name for it. It hooks on to like a treadmill or something, or there's a name.
Okay.
I can't remember the name at the moment. But anyway, it was going to be one of those.
But he's not riding on streets and colliding with pedestrians and being hit by cars and all. It's like in your
home. No, but he did that when he was little.
Yeah, well.
See, I never rode a bike, so I don't know. He went off to, got his bike, and I guess I just went home after that, I guess. I don't know if I saw him much after that. Anyway.
Like a cold break.
Yeah. So that was 2008. I think I continued being his errand girl for a year after we broke up.
Wow.
I did find him an apartment to live in because it was my responsibility.
Wow.
So I did find him his apartment.
Does he still live in that apartment to this day? Do you know?
No. I think he lives in the States now. Hmm. But it's.
You said it right when you said doormat, right? Like literally.
Yeah.
Let someone walk all over you. How are you different today?
It's funny because, and now it's in the book, but I can't remember the exact year, 2012, 2013, something. He came back. He was living in Europe and he came back, and I don't know, because rentals weren't as hard to find into 2012 as they are now. Mm-hmm. But I found it really strange that he moved into an apartment across the street from me.
Huh.
I thought, okay, I know it's a cheap area, but I mean, his family's in Surrey. Why would you move right across the street from me?
Yeah.
So I ignored it because I didn't care at that point. And then he messaged me and he said, well, you didn't acknowledge me. And I'm like, okay, I'm blind too. Like, you could be walking beside me. I don't recognize faces, especially ones I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
I'm not going to recognize you. And so he wanted to see me or something. And I said, okay, well, we can sit outside, like right on my pathway, like in front of my building. And he goes, you're not inviting me inside. Nope. And he goes, okay, well, here's the thing. I can give you a day, one day a week. I'll come over, you'll cook. And then, I'll thank you, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Quid pro quo.
And I just said to him, what in the world makes you think I would even think about that? He goes, well, you used to. Why do you ask so many questions now? And I'm like, because I've probably grown up, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But I remember being so shocked. And just like at me, at the fact that, I mean, maybe 2 years before, maybe I would have said yes to that. Again, because again, ableism again, like, oh God, he can't cook. Of course I'm going to cook for him because I can cook. Right. So anyway, I wrote Broken Bites because I needed closure. I was finally in counseling. I started counseling in 2010. And I was finally at a point where I had forgiven myself and stopped blaming myself. As you say,
important.
I don't want to hate. I don't want to say he was horrible. I think we were not right for each other.
Yep.
That's it. That's just it. Right. And I mean, there were a lot of things I needed to change about me, things, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think I wanted to write it just to get that off my chest and say, I've grown up a lot. And I always say the best thing, he did the best thing for me. He got me to move out of my cultural kind of close, like I was so closed in and so protected, and I would not have been able to grow.
Right.
And it was all out of love, but I would not have been able to grow if I hadn't moved like so far away that my parents can't even visit me. Well, not
like on a day-to-day basis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have moved to my own place in Toronto, but they would have been there every day. Right. And I mean, I remember still when I asked my dad for a recipe to this day, he'll go, no, that's too much oil and it'll be hot. And I'm like, yeah, dad.
Yeah. I know. And if you burn yourself, it's your fault.
I'm like, I'll just look it up on the internet. Thank you.
Yeah. But, I mean, so interesting that you can reflect back on that now.
It's
right.
It's
where you could have been had you not have left that a bit of a stifling atmosphere. Like you said, you can be stifled out of love too.
Yes.
Overprotective, like, helicopter parents.
That's right. And it is out of love. And my parents still to this day either wish I were with them or with my brother.
Right.
But yeah, best thing Brogan ever did for me was to get me way out here, mm-hmm. where I have no family. Mm-hmm. And I had to figure stuff out on my own. And I guess my Trinidad, you know, thing kicked in, right? Well, you gotta keep up, or
yeah.
What are you gonna
or
do?
Or get left behind, yeah.
Right? And yeah, it's you know, I wish him well. And I have no hard feelings, like, and that's different. My culture, you hate your exes no matter what.
Yeah.
You begrudge them every success they have. And I don't see the point. It's too much energy.
It's too much energy. I hear you on that. Yeah.
It's
I'm like
too
that
much
with
energy.
My ex too. It's too much energy.
You know, there is one update. Oh, when was that now? Was that 2014? 2015? Oh, can't remember. No, it was after my surgery.
Says the girl who has a great memory.
Yeah. Shows that it was after my surgery. 2019. So Brogan actually came back for a goalball tournament. So blind sport.
Mm-hmm.
He plays goalball. I used to be the goalball baker. This was when they were all fat guys, the BC goalball team. They were all fat guys. And
still a couple of them.
To encourage them to run laps, I would say they would get brownies because I'd bake them. And then the coach kicked me out after about when they started to get serious. He's like, you know, that's not helping. I'm like, oh, all right, well, I'll just go now. But anyway, so he was here and he said he'd like to catch up. And I said, I don't see the point. I mean, I don't wish you badly, but I just don't see the point.
Yeah.
Where was I getting with that? I forgot why I was talking about this, but I did.
There was an update of some kind.
Yeah, there was an update. I can't remember, but he came and I guess that was the up kind of like, I had no urge.
Yeah.
I had no urge to see him. I mean, good for him and all this. And, that's what it was. He said, I read your book and I had my heart dropped because I never thought he would. And I never considered my reaction if he ever had. Because first of all, it's a print book. I know it's available on Kindle. So, I mean, I know he would, but I just never thought he would be interested in it because the Brogan I knew, as soon as somebody was out of his life, they were done and they did not exist.
Right.
So I didn't ever conceptualize that he would actually read the book, because why? I'm done. I'm out of his life.
Yeah.
So he was here and I said, no, I don't see any point in connecting. So the next morning he said, oh, I read your book And, you know, it makes me really sad that I was, you know, he was saying all the things I maybe imagined or hoped he would say back in 2008. And I remember thinking, well, you know, if it's true, I'm happy that you're seeing, like you're realizing that we were both mm-hmm. at fault or whatever. Mm-hmm. If it's not true, like, why are you saying it? I mean, are you just saying it so I'll say, okay, so what's my day? Like, I don't know. It's hard to trust him.
Yeah.
Right. But I remember having a heart attack, just going, oh my God, he read the book. And coming back to like my writing, I write from real experience. I write what I know. And my best friend says, she told me she has a problem reading my writing because it sounds like she's reading my diary or she's right. in my bedroom.
Yeah, and very, very intimate, very personal.
It is. And that's the way I want people to feel something when they read my writing. I don't want them to just go, okay, well, yeah, well, another whatever.
Yeah. You know?
And I just never thought that, you know, Brogan would actually read, because I mean, there are emails in there. That's his emails. Like yeah. those are his words.
Yeah.
But then I'm thinking, well, I didn't make anything up.
Yeah. Yeah. You have nothing to hide.
It's all true.
Yeah.
And you know, when he said to me in an email, your purpose to me is dead. That's his words. Mm-hmm. That's his words. So, you know, so what? He read it and he said, yeah, he, you know, it was, so I asked him to write a testimonial for my book. He never did.
Or is not.
I just let it drop. But yeah, it's, you know, writing for me is that it has to be almost visceral. I don't know. It's just my way.
What's that process like for you though, when you're writing? Do you, you know, because a lot of folks, you know, this, we've talked about this before, you and I, that I struggle mm-hmm. with writing because I don't quite understand the show versus tell thing. I've right. never really, you know, I know when I hear what I think is good writing, but I don't know how to incorporate that into my own writing. So what's the process like for you? What can you teach folks about, you know, who are sitting on the fence thinking I'd love to write, but I don't know how?
Yeah, the best way I can tell you. So I know you're into acting and see, I don't get the process of acting, of yeah, getting yeah. yourself into a character, right? But that's exactly the writing process. So you forget that you're writing something. You right. are that character, right? Like you are, like when I'm writing about Brogan, like I'm thinking like him. I'm no longer just Christy typing on a screen, because then I just end up telling you a story, not showing you anything. Right. So right. I use Brogan's words. You know, I cook his favorite things because he would never eat, you know, a green salad with, well, maybe he does now, but anyway, he never right. eat like tofu. Right. So it had to be pork chops and, you know, fried potatoes. But that's it. It's getting into that character and actually writing it and going, no, he wouldn't say it like that. Like he wouldn't say I had sex with a girl. He would say I pounded her.
Right. Right.
Right. And I mean, when I write it like that, I feel awful, right? Because I'm like, ugh, like I never say that, but it's not me that I'm writing, it's Brogan's words. So I think that's how I teach show and tell. It's don't tell me about the character. Show me, like pretend you're them.
Right. Right. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it takes a lot of breaking down that self-consciousness.
Right? Yeah.
And I think I mentioned that before in our other writing workshop. It's like, You really have to just break down that wall and go, okay, you're writing this, right? You're writing it for a purpose. Mm-hmm. So just say it. Say what needs to be said. I remember, so I told you at the beginning that I was writing very fancy, the British way.
Right.
And I remember one of my exes, who is the ex in the first story in Brogan Bites, the story in the Played, it's called Played. And he loves writing, and he's a good writer. And I remember him saying to me, he goes, he read something of mine in 1998 when we were going out back in the day. And he said, "Why are you sounding so stuffy? Where's your voice? That's not the Christie I know." And I said, "What do you mean? I'm writing an essay." And he's like, no, you're writing a story. And that's not, like, it has no personality in it. And I'm like, huh, okay. And then he sent me, he subscribed me to a year subscription to Writer's Digest. Now that's the way to get to me. Give me writing resources as a peasant. We're still really, really good friends, that ex and mine.
Another blind guy.
Yes. Much to my current boyfriend's dismay, that one and I are still very, very close. So, but yeah, he pushed me. And so I still wasn't getting it. You know how he made me practice? He said, "We're going to write a porn story together." And I said, what are you talking about? He's like, "Yeah, we are." So I started in third person, like, you know, she, blah, blah, blah. He goes, no, I. I and you. And that's how we're going to write it.
Interesting.
And I remember, because I was in university, like he was an early bird. So he'd make me write a paragraph before I went to class, which was a mind shift. Because I'm like, I have to write this porn thing and then go to philosophy lecture? Really? Like, what are you doing to me?
Wow. But
he pushed me to just, he goes, "No, what would you say? What would you say? What would you feel?" And I'm like, okay, I'm getting this. And I remember my writing instructor that year, I submitted the third draft of a poem, and he goes, "You got it. I'm in there." Awesome. In that situation. And I'm like, okay. I got my own voice now.
Yeah, some great advice there for folks who are just starting to.
It takes a lot of self-conscious. And again, and it's acting, yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, as an actor, maybe you don't like to do whatever, sexual scenes or whatever, but you have to do it. So you have to get into character. So that's the best way I can explain it.
I think that's fantastically valuable. In our last minute together, because our time is just blown by, where can folks find the book or other things that you've written?
So Brogan Bites is available on Amazon. As far as I know, Amazon .ca only offers the Kindle version. But if you want the paperback version, you have to order it through the United States. Now, I haven't checked this recently, but when it was first published, Canada didn't do Amazon printing.
Right.
So it could have changed. I don't know. But as far as I know, if you want the print copy, you have to go through the US.
Awesome. You can always start with
Britain. Just Google me.
I was going to say, you can always start with Google. Christie Cassie. You want to spell your name quickly?
Yep. K-R-I-S-T-Y and last name K-A-S-S-I-E.
Awesome.
I seem to be the only Christie Cassie on Amazon or Google. So that's kind of cool. People either have Cassie as a first name or not at all. So, I've been published in like online magazines, and I did start a second memoir, and I don't know, life got in the way, but I intend.
It always does.
And I do have a murder mystery that I'm working on that I really want to finish because it's cool.
Awesome.
So
you'll have to come back and
do books.
Yeah, you'll have to come back and share some of your other writing with us. We're eager to hear some more. Christie, thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing Brogan Bites with us. Listeners, join us again next Wednesday on Access Radio.